This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. The death toll continues to climb and dozens are reported missing as severe flooding in Germany and Belgium turns streams and streets into raging torrents that swept away cars and caused houses to collapse. Recent storms across parts of Western Europe made rivers and reservoirs burst their banks, triggering flash flooding. Speaking at a news conference in the White House after meeting with President Joe Biden, German Chancellor Angela Merkel said in her words, "My empathy and my heart goes to all of those who in this catastrophe lost their loved ones or who are still worrying about the fate of people still missing. And I, including Belgium, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands, who have also suffered from the flooding." The death toll is expected to rise as dozens of people are still missing. Some of the Colombian nationals detained by the Haitian National Police in connection with the assassination of President Jovenel Moise took part in U.S. military training and education, a Pentagon spokesperson confirmed in a statement emailed to VOA. According to the Pentagon, the U.S. Defense Department trains thousands of military people from South America, Central America, and the Caribbean each year. Haitian National Police Chief Leon Charles said police have arrested 18 Colombians in connection with the assassination. President Biden said Thursday that he was not open to U.S. military involvement in the country, but that he would send troops to fortify the U.S. embassy in Haiti. Moise was shot and killed in the early hours of July 7th at his home outside of Port-au-Prince. His wife injured in the attack, recovering at a Miami, Florida hospital. The interim prime minister told reporters he had spoken to the first lady and that she's doing well. For more news, join us, voanews.com. By remote, this is VOA News. The U.S. government said Thursday it will begin offering up to $10 million for information to identify or locate malicious cyber actors working on behalf of a foreign government that are trying to cripple the internet operations of American businesses and infrastructure. The new reward was announced as the U.S. faces a growing threat from ransomware attacks. The demand from foreign entities that U.S. corporations and institutions pay millions of dollars to unlock critical technology systems that hackers have seized. U.S. officials say the attacks have usually originated overseas, frequently from Russia. The U.S. says that about $350 million in ransom was paid to malicious cyber actors last year, a more than 300% increase from the previous year. President Biden said Thursday that Washington would review whether it would help restore the internet in Cuba, which has suffered blackouts since protests erupted last weekend. A number of U.S. lawmakers have urged the president in recent days to address connectivity issues on the island, as protests over food and medicine shortages have rocked Havana, leaving at least one person dead and hundreds arrested. Cuba's president and other officials have blamed the unrest on social media postings by Cuban Americans and the U.S. government's decades-long embargo on Cuba. Sanctions and restrictions imposed by former President Donald Trump and a drop in tourism related to the pandemic have put extra pressure on the Cuban economy in recent years. Well, Pfizer and two subsidiaries have agreed to pay $345 million under a proposed settlement to resolve lawsuits over EpiPen price hikes. The litigation goes back 5 years when lawsuits were filed alleging anti-competitive conduct. EpiPens are auto-injectable devices that are used for emergency treatment of a life-threatening allergic reaction. The administration of President Biden on Thursday launched the country's biggest anti-poverty program in a half century, sending monthly payments for the first time to help most American parents care for their children. Treasury Department said the money will be deposited in bank accounts of about 39 million households, covering 88% of children in the U.S. For more news, please join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, reporting by remote, VOA News. Mm-hmm.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The WHO warns that COVID-19 is fast rising in Africa.
Over the past month, Africa recorded an additional 1 million cases. This is the shortest time it's taken so far to add 1 million cases. This COVID-19 resurgence is the fastest the continent has seen.
The political party assembly in Eswatini says it will not participate in a dialogue with King Mswati III, scheduled for today, Friday. Kenya's president endorses two special envoys to help accelerate the fight against malaria in Africa. And Burundi's government denies opposition claims that its members are being abducted.
Faced with recent diplomatic successes and the consolidation of democracy here in Burundi, some people prefer to take the path of lies because the government of Burundi cannot abduct anyone.
And what is killing dozens of dolphins and sea turtles along the sea coast of Senegal? Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The World Health Organization has warned that COVID-19 is fast rising in Africa, with the death toll jumping 43% in the past week. The WHO says the continent recorded 1 million new cases in just 1 month, with several countries facing shortages of oxygen and beds for patients. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Speaking during a virtual press briefing Thursday, Matshidiso Moeti, WHO regional director, said Africa is recording its highest number of COVID-19 cases since the virus hit the continent in early 2020.
Over the past month, Africa recorded an additional 1 million cases. This is the shortest time it's taken so far to add 1 million cases. Comparatively, it took around 3 months to move from 4 million to 5 million cases. This COVID-19 resurgence is the fastest the continent has seen.
The Global Health Agency says 12 African countries are experiencing an upward trend of coronavirus, including Algeria, Malawi, Senegal, and Zimbabwe. Moeti says the number of Africans losing lives to the virus is high.
As this surge sweeps across Africa, we're witnessing the brutal cost in lives lost. Deaths have climbed steeply for the past 5 weeks, jumping 40% in the past week. This is a clear warning. Our hospitals are at a breaking point. In all, 153,000 people have sadly died. Africa is now just 1% shy of the peak in fatalities reached in January.
The increase in deaths is partly blamed on the Delta coronavirus variant that medical experts say is the most transmittable of all the variants. It has been reported in 21 African countries. Namibia is one African country where the total number of COVID-19 positives is on the decline. However, more than 1,000 people have died there from COVID-19 in the last month. Ismail Kajitae is a physician at the Ministry of Health and Social Services in Namibia. He explains why the death toll is so high.
A high prevalence of comorbidities in some communities, limited capacity in some districts and regions to manage severe and critical cases, and strong misinformation lobby resulting in non-compliance to public health measures, underutilizing of available healthcare services, and delayed complicated presentations to our health facilities.
So far, only 18 million people out of the 1.3 billion living in Africa have been vaccinated. Some African countries blame the slow vaccination process on the shortage of vaccine doses in the global market. Catherine Choktunji is the head of the African Population and Health Research Center. She says African governments should ask their citizens to follow health protocols like washing hands and wearing masks to limit the spread of the virus.
Other than the usual measures, Africa doesn't have too many options without really having much of its population vaccinated. So the hope is that there's a lot of hope that in the next month, around August, many countries will receive at least substantial doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. But before then, really just keeping in place the usual measures.
Most African countries have eased health measures meant to combat the spread of the virus for economic reasons, and failure to follow those measures is blamed for the spread. Some African countries expect to get hundreds of thousands of vaccines in the coming weeks as the Aspen pharmaceutical company in South Africa begins producing 400 million vaccines. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
In Eswatini, the political party assembly says it will now participate in the dialogue with King Mswati III, scheduled for today, Friday, because the talks are mere window dressing, which is unlikely to address the demand for democracy. King Mswati III called for a dialogue with citizens after pro-democracy groups and students demanded relevant reforms, which led to violent protests. Dozens of people died, many more injured, and property was damaged during the demonstration. Bongisini Shabangu is the general secretary of the Swaziland Democratic Party. He tells viewers Peter Clotte that the group will only agree to a dialogue mediated by independent international organizations such as the Southern African Development Community, SADC.
It's typical of government. They've been doing the same thing previously. Whenever there's pressure, political pressure, they will organize these window dressing for international community to think the Eswatini government is talking to its people. We are looking for a genuine, meaningful dialogue that will be facilitated by an independent mediator.
Why do you think this is not going to be genuine? Because the call has been seconded or praised by the U.S. Embassy in Mbabane.
They will also be disappointed at the outcome, because in the past, this has happened. But if you can ask a Swatini government for resolutions of the past Sibaya gatherings and the implementation of these resolutions and recommendations, they've got nothing to show. They cannot show you anything. So we were not impressed. Maybe a foreign person or an international person can be easily impressed, but as Swazis who've been here, seen that and done that with this government, we are not impressed.
But in Mbogesini, the king has invited everybody to come to share your views about the way forward. Why are you suspicious of the past and looking forward to what you anticipate is a window dressing? Why?
It's because that was what has happened in all the other incidents. It has washed down our optimism. We used to also be optimistic about this. And I can make an example, Peter, where the Sibaya gathering recommended a removal, a vote of no confidence on a prime minister. And the parliament went on to implement that. It was a Sibaya resolution. But the king never signed the bill that was removing the prime minister. Because the king, if he doesn't sign any resolution or recommendation on a bill, it doesn't become a law. So as long as the king has got these enormous powers, anything that is being done by his government, we're not convinced. We don't have faith in it. That's why we're embracing the one that is coming with SADC. Because we want to give them a chance to mediate and call us to order the ruling regime ourselves so that we dialogue on the interests of the people and taking back the power from the king to the people. So it's the dialogue that we're looking for. It's all about that.
Bongisani Shabangu is the Secretary General of the Swaziland Democratic Party. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotin. The leader of Burundi's main opposition National Congress for Freedom Party says there is no difference between the late President Pierre Nkurunziza's administration and that of current President Evariste Ndayishimiye when it comes to the treatment of the opposition. Agathon Raza says just like under President Nkurunziza, President Ndayishimiye's government continues to target opposition supporters every time there is a grenade attack in the capital, Bujumbura.
We see that there is a kind of persecution aimed at annihilating CNL because any incident that occurs, members of CNL are targeted. And unfortunately, some other times people disappear when they have been abducted unjustly. And we are a little bit surprised to hear the President of the Republic saying that there is no disappearances, that those who are arrested are criminals when they cannot establish what kind of crime they have committed, and when they cannot tell us where they are putting in jail those guys who are arrested.
How do you know, Mr. Agathon, that it is the government that is abducting the people who have disappeared, as you say, from your party?
Modus operandi is known. People are arrested either by the police or the Imbonerakure, which is a militia belonging to the CNDD-FDD, the ruling party. And they are using vehicles which are bearing plate numbers from the government, some other times, or from the police. Some others are arrested by people from the National Intelligence Service. So the government cannot deny that it is not responsible for those abductions.
Have you complained to the Burundian government about these disappearances?
We've been complaining ever since, even under the ruling of Pierre Nkurunziza. We even managed to write a letter to him, and we didn't even get the response of that letter. Today, just to give you an example, last Friday, a member of CNL have been arrested by members of the army who were in a pickup belonged to the Burundian army. We don't know where they have conducted him, but some hearsay mentioned that that guy has been killed. He has been arrested in the day broad light, and they say this is false allegations, but there are witnesses who saw what happened that time. And even the plate number of that car is known, and it is said that aboard that car was an officer of the army. How can they say that they are not responsible for that, for example?
Mr. Agathon, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us.
Thank you very much.
Agathon Rwasa is the leader of Burundi's main opposition National Congress for Freedom Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Bujumbura. A spokesperson for Burundian President Evariste Ndayishimiye says allegations by the country's main opposition leader that government security has resumed abduction of opposition supporters is fake news and lies intended to smear Burundi's recent diplomatic successes and the consolidation of democracy. Wele Nyamitwe, the chief of the Information and Communications Division at the Burundian State House, says the opposition is embarrassed by these successes.
These are false allegations, fake news, aimed to tarnish the image of Burundi. I can say that first, with recent diplomatic successes and the consolidation of democracy here in Burundi, some people prefer to take the path of lies. This is what he's doing, because the government of Burundi cannot abduct anyone. It's a government's responsibility to protect all the citizens.
Mr. Agathon Rwasa says that the human rights situation in Burundi, meaning the human rights situation under President Evariste, when it comes to the treatment of the opposition, is no different under the late President Pierre Nkurunziza.
Stating that the human rights situation in Burundi is not good is a statement with no wisdom at all. Only one person cannot bring such allegations against a country, Burundi, seen otherwise by all other national and international actors. So Agathon Rwasa should leave his failure quietly and perhaps find another way of doing politics, because the path of lying is no longer successful.
So Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan is traveling to Burundi today, Friday, July 16. What can you tell us about this trip in terms of Burundi-Tanzania relations?
Yes, Tanzania and Burundi have historical and strong ties since the early years of independence. So President Samia Suluhu Hassan comes to Burundi to further strengthen these bonds of friendship and solidarity that have always existed between Burundi and Tanzania. The two heads of states have expressed their commitment to collaborate for the benefit of Burundi and Tanzania peoples and for the benefit of all the region and the African continent.
Willie Nyamitwe is the chief of the Information and Communications Division at the Burundian State House. He was speaking with us from the capital, Bujumbura. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, July 16. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has endorsed the appointment of two special envoys to help accelerate the fight against malaria in Africa. The two, a Kenyan, Anthony Okara, and Professor Sheila Tlu of Botswana, are mandated to work with the continent's regional economic communities. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA.
With malaria being among the killer diseases in Africa, the African Leaders Malaria Alliance, ALMA, is involving Africa's youth in the fight against the tropical disease as they call for the establishment of Continental Youth Army to boost anti-malaria efforts. Anthony Okara, a Kenyan appointee for ALMA Youth, said that African region is dwelling on domestic resource mobilization to fight malaria in the continent.
Mobilization of domestic resources, which would be applied towards the war on malaria. And within that, there are three main things. The first is to set up end malaria councils in at least 15 countries in the next 2 years. Secondly, to promote manufacturing of drugs within the continent. And we don't always have to rely on external help. We like to see capacity being built, which can go a long way in helping the fight.
The appointees will work closely with the East African Community, ESC, Southern African Development Community, SADC, and the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, to prioritize the fight against malaria in their programming. Anthony says working with different member states will help the youth fight malaria.
The focus of ALMA is working with different regional economic communities, the different member states of the AU, focusing on the youth as a key partner and actor in this war to fight malaria. The idea is to integrate the targets we have, the objectives on malaria, alongside all other issues that affect the youth at every level, every nation. They'll participate in hopefully bringing the energy on board, the enthusiasm, and focusing in the fight against malaria.
On the other hand, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta, who is also chairperson of ALMA, speaking during the endorsement, said that the youth contribution to malaria campaign will help eradicate the disease in the region.
The strategy provides a framework for engaging youth across Africa to develop a continental ALMA youth army for malaria elimination and to drive youth contribution to the broader health and development agenda. The vision of our plan is to encourage our youth across Africa to advocate and drive action towards malaria elimination and the expansion of universal health coverage.
President Kenyatta said through ALMA trainings, there is increasing adoption of anti-malaria scorecards by African nations, despite the high risk of malaria infections in many countries across the continent.
Approximately 109 million people living in the six countries of the East African community, 394 million people living in the 17 countries in West Africa, and 186 million people in 10 countries in Central Africa are at high risk of malaria infection each year. Now, more than ever, we need to strengthen our surveillance and ensure that 100% of suspected cases are tested and all confirmed cases are treated.
The African Leaders Malaria Alliance Scorecard for Accountability and Action tracks malaria, reproductive health, adolescents' health, and neglected tropical disease indicators on the continent. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
Dozens of dolphin and sea turtle carcasses were found along the coast of northern Senegal a week ago, and Greenpeace Africa is calling on the Senegalese government to provide a full necrology of the cause of death of the animals. Greenpeace Africa campaigner Awa Traore told Ricky Stryak that while the cause of death is still unknown, with oil giant BP announcing drilling plans in the area, there is cause for concern.
We think that further investigation needs to occur to determine the real cause. Now, scientifically speaking, and based on general analysis made over the years around those death frequency, there is no real correlation or direct link of these recent years, death with past years ones. And so this death phenomenon really started in these last 2 to 3 years. And there is an immediate factor that is causing it. That's why it's definitely urgent to further investigate this case.
What are the environmental concerns with the BP installation, and how are they linked to these deaths, possibly?
You could really imagine, given the dozen of dolphins and turtle carcass that were found in North Senegal along the shores of Saint Louis. Some other reports even go further in the southeast of Senegal.
That was Awa Traore, a campaigner for Greenpeace Africa. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with the CAF Elite Club competition, the CAF Champions League, where South Africa's Kaizer Chiefs will face Egypt's Al Hokli in the 2020-2021 CAF Champions League on Saturday at the Complex Mohammed V Stadium in Casablanca, Morocco. This will be the fourth CAF Champions League final between teams from South Africa and Egypt, with Al Hokli winning 2 for the Egyptians against Mamelodi Sundowns in 2001 and Orlando Pirates in 2013, and Mamelodi Sundowns defeating Zamalek in 2016. Kaizer Chiefs are the first team to reach the final of the CAF Champions League in their debut season in the competition since AS Vita Club in 2014, while they could become the third team from South Africa to win the CAF Champions League after Orlando Pirates in 1995 and Mamelodi Sundowns in 2016. Staying with football news, Bafana's preparation for Friday's Southern African Regional Tournament, the COSAFA Cup semi-finals against Mozambique, have suffered a setback after 2 members of the camp tested positive for COVID-19. The South African Football Association has confirmed that midfielder Masileke Folongo and physiotherapist Nlala Ndlovu both returned positive results for COVID-19 following the latest round of testing. Due to having to isolate for a period of 10 days, Folongo will miss Bafana Bafana's last 4 clash against Mozambique later today. He will also miss Sunday's final should Bafana Bafana qualify against either Senegal or Eswatini. In women's football, Black Queens of Ghana, Bayana Bayana of South Africa, as well as the Indomitable Lionesses of Cameroon, including Morocco and Mali, will all square up against the Super Falcons of Nigeria in the maiden edition of the Aisha Buhari Invitational Women's Football Tournament in Lagos. The Nigerian Football Federation confirmed the list of the 5 participating countries, including host Nigeria on Thursday. The city of Lagos will host the 6th Nation Invitational in September for a glittering trophy named in honor of Nigeria's First Lady, Aisha Buhari. And now to Olympic news. 3 members of the Mozambican delegation to the Tokyo Olympic Games have tested positive for the coronavirus. The Mozambique Olympic Committee, in a statement on Thursday, said that the 3 positive cases were detected during the daily test, which all members of the delegation must take. All 3 cases are asymptomatic. The Mozambique Olympic Committee did not name the 3 people contaminated, but said that their participation in the Tokyo Olympic Games has not yet been compromised, since the period of isolation required by the authorities will probably allow them to obtain a negative test result prior to departure for Tokyo. And staying with Olympic news, 8 athletes from the Kenya women's rugby team were classified as close contacts after a passenger on their flight to Tokyo tested positive for coronavirus. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, July 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Tracy Carter, filling in for Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Colotti and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers. I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.